classifies disgrace and criticize all fears. Take the rag away from your face. Now ain't the time for your tears.
We want justice! We want justice! We want justice! We want justice!
The Gay Life on KSAN presents White Knight, Black Dish, or the Ultimate Last Fag Joke. On the steps of City Hall on a rainy day in January 1978, gay leader Harvey Milk was sworn in as a supervisor of the City and County of San Francisco.
Harvey, please raise your right hand. Do you, Harvey Milk, solemnly swear or affirm that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that you will bear true faith and allegiance to the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California, that you take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that you will well and faithfully discharge the duties upon which you are about to enter, and during such time as you hold the office of Supervisor, District Number 5.
I have to say again, I do. A moment of levity. Anita Bryant said gay people brought the drought to San Francisco, and look what's happening.
Harvey Milk spoke out about the police.
So they're lying. Blank, period. Exclamation point. They lie. They lie through their teeth. And until they stop that, they can't build up the trust. This phoniness. You know, sure, I don't think anybody who kills a cop should be put away and all that stuff. I think anybody who commits any kind of crime with a gun should get a hard penalty. 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, whatever. Lock them up. Let them know. Any crime with a gun, no ifs, ands, buts about it. No parole, no extended mitigating circumstances. You commit a crime with a gun, any kind of crime, into the slammer. Bang.
As president of the Board of Supervisors, it's my duty to make this announcement. Both Mayor Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk have been shot and killed. The suspect is Supervisor Dan White.
Dan White. It's been driving me mad to tell you this. For the murder of one Italian, middle-class, allegedly heterosexual liberal mayor, and for the murder of one petty bourgeois Jewish faggot, and for staining the steps you trod on with the blood of these two, I promise you this. If you plead insanity, if you plead insanity, I promise you this. If you get off because of insanity, I promise you this. You will go stark, raving mad.
What's just that? These silly people just charging and taking money from big corporations and not recording it. I never did that. I never took money from anybody.
You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. And in the middle of negotiations, you break down. I never give you my number. I only give you my situation. And in the middle of investigation, I break down.
And I saw more and more evidence of this during the week when papers reported that someone else is going to be reappointed. I couldn't get through the mayor.
The mayor never called me. He told me he was going to call me before he made any decision. He never did that.
You didn't try to call me.
Why? Didn't have even the courtesy to call me or tell me that I wasn't going to be reappointed. And then I got kind of fuzzy and just my head didn't feel right. And then he said, well, I've had people in your district say they don't want you. And I reiterated what I had told them before, that these were people that had brought false charges against me, had been dogging me.
Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill. Thy neighbor. Thou shalt not kill.
He sat down, he was talking, and nothing was getting through to me. It was just like a roaring in my ears. And he was in his office when I came into the supervisor's area, and I said, Harvey, can I talk to you? And he got up, or he was standing up, I can't remember, and he walked into the room, and then I shut my door, and he and I were in there. And then I didn't even know what I was doing, and he just kind of smirked at me, as if to say, too bad. And then I just got all flushed and hot, and I shot him.
The killer awoke before dawn. He put his boots on. He took a face from the ancient gallery and he walked on down the hall. He went into the room where his sister lived, and then he paid a visit to his brother, and then he walked on down the hall, and he came to a door, and he looked inside. Father, yes, son, I want to kill you. Mother, I want to.
And worked hard and never cheated anybody, or, you know, I'm not a crook or anything.
Well, I'm not a crook.
I'm not a crook or anything.
Well, I'm not a crook.
When I was under this pressure at home, and at night I couldn't sleep. I didn't sleep last night. I wasn't even with my wife in bed. I was on the couch because I didn't want to bother her. I couldn't sleep. I never even slept.
Now it's time to say good night. Good night. Sleep tight.
I just wanted to talk to him. That's all. And at least have him be honest with me and tell me why he was doing it. Not because I was a bad supervisor or anything, but I never killed anybody before. I never shot anybody.
Mama just killed a man. Put a gun against his head. Pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun. But now I've gone and thrown it all away.
never hurt anybody. It's just it's past several months. It got to the point I couldn't take it. And I never wanted a job for ego or, you know, perpetuate myself or anything like that. I was just trying to do a good job for the city.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody.
Well, White's attorney, Douglas Schmidt, got the jury to call a double political assassination manslaughter. That can also be pronounced man's laughter. Schmidt's the kind of lawyer who could get a charge of forcible sodomy reduced to following too closely and tried in traffic court. In fact, if Milk and Moscone had lived, Schmidt would probably have charged them with unlawful interference with the bullets of an ex-police officer. White owns a junk food counter on Pier 39. You know, that's down in the tourist ghetto. And he actually claimed that junk food, Twinkies, do you believe that? Twinkies made him do it. Eat a Twinkie, kill a cop. That's what the angry graffiti said in San Francisco's gay neighborhoods. But now that gays are at the police academy, maybe that should be, kill a Twinkie, eat a cop. But seriously, I mean very seriously, even before the verdict, Milk's successor, Supervisor Harry Britt, warned of the reaction that a lenient verdict might produce.
Our community has been very quiet during the Dan White trial, but there's no doubt we're very tired of hearing outpourings of sympathy for this pathetic man and hearing him portrayed as a victim, as a nice guy who ate too many candy bars. And certainly as we get toward the jury time, we are building anger toward Dan White.
What do you think might happen if Dan White were found guilty of a lesser offense, like manslaughter or something of that nature, as his defense attorneys are trying to get him off with that?
We'll have to deal with it when it comes up, but it will be something to deal with if it comes up. I like to think that justice will be done and to assume that that will happen until the time comes. But if the community perceives that Dan White is being treated other than justly because he happened to be a clean-cut ex-cop, then there will be a very serious reaction in the community.
In the courtroom of honor, the judge pounded his gavel to show that all's equal and that the courts are on the level and that the strings in the books ain't pulled and persuaded and that even the nobles get properly handled. Once that the cops have chased after and caught him, and that the ladder of law has no top and no bottom, stared at the person who killed for no reason, who just happened to be feeling that way without warning, and he spoke through his cloak most deep and distinguished, and handed out strongly for penalty and repentance Williams and Zinger with a 6-month sentence. But you who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears, bury the ray deep in your face, for now's the time for your tears.
Someone, and I believe it's Cleve Jones, who was one of the principal spokespeople for the gay community after the death of Harmony Milk, is trying to talk through a bullhorn, and I can barely hear him in one part of the crowd saying, Harvey hated violence, please, no violence. But now the crowd is screaming, Dan White's a pig. The TV lights are on the police who are standing in front of the center doors of City Hall. People are right up with their hands in the faces of those police chanting, Dan White's a pig. Barricade of newspaper racks and trash dumpsters has been set on fire at the corner of Larkin and McAllister. Across the street, police cars are burning. And police have gone through once on motorcycles to try to get people to stop, but it hasn't had much effect. Police cars have gone through here just a little while ago. People, the sound you hear in the background is the alarm sirens of burning police cars going off, and also the sound of people dragging newspaper racks and scavenger boxes into the middle of Larkin and McAllister streets and setting them on fire. There are 5 or 6 police cars burning that I can see with bright flames in front of the state office building. The police massing on the other side of the park haven't seemed to want to move over here yet. The fires are putting forth extremely thick smoke. And now some police motorcycle units have circled around to the Grove Street side. There's been no attempt by the fire department since their original attempt to get through here and to put out these fires, although we hear sirens in all directions. The barricades being set up now will effectively prevent the fire department from getting through, which is, I'm sure, exactly what the people building them have in mind. Four police cars in a row burning on this end of McAllister Street, 2 burning down the other end, 1 on this side of the street. Welcome over here, at least 7 police cars. A guy just walked by me and said, "Welcome to the 80s.
There is no question at all that there were a number of incidents last night in which police behaved very badly.
Supervisor Britt on the elephant walk incident on Castro Street the night of May 21st.
At some point during the evening, according to the reports that I have received, police officers entered that bar in force without any provocation that has been reported to me. There's a great deal of anger in the community when that sort of thing happens. The police did have no business on Castro Street. When I went down there last night and found hundreds and hundreds of police officers there, many of them from out of town.
And so the May 21st riot left San Francisco City Hall as the nation's finest example of boarded-up French Renaissance architecture. The next night, we had a peaceful birthday party for Harvey Milk on Castro Street. Riots one night and partying the next? Sure, it's the odd-even plan. On the other hand, it might have been in the stars. The sun had just entered Gemini, and that's a sign notorious for its juxtaposition of opposites. In fact, both Harvey Milk and Harry Britt are Geminis. Mayor Dianne Feinstein today fulfilled her solemn pledge to appoint a Gemini to succeed Gemini Supervisor Harvey Milk. The news was greeted with jubilation in the city's large and influential Gemini community located atop Twin Peaks. Petitions are now being circulated to increase the number of supervisors from 11 to 12, so every sign has its soup. Well, D.A. Joe Freitas is prosecuting the people arrested in the riots. Too bad he doesn't assign the same prosecutors who handled the White case. In fact, there have been so many investigations of the riot that it's become a Castro Street status symbol to be subpoenaed. As Jerry Rubin once said, those who haven't been called are suffering from subpoenas envy. And then the police voted no confidence in Chief Gain. Now why should the police set city policy? They don't even live here. And now, a dramatization of an actual incident that occurred at the North Beach Photo Fair on the weekend following the verdict.
Mom? Who's the man in that picture?
That's the faggot they killed, Harvey Milk.
Who's that one, Mommy?
That's Moscone. They got him, too.
Why'd they kill him, Mom?
He was a commie.
Was Harvey Milk a commie?
I don't know.
Who killed him, Mommy?
Dan White. He's a fireman and policeman.
Yeah, and a murderer.
Don't say that. He's a good man from a good family.
Good men don't go around shooting people.
You shut up. I'm going to teach my kids to shoot anyone who tries to harm them, so get lost.
Well, at least she says what she thinks.
You've got to be taught to hate and fear. You've got to be taught from year to year. It's got to be drummed in your dear little ear. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught to be afraid of people whose eyes are oddly made, and people whose skin is a different shade. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be taught before it's too late, before you are 6 or 7 or 8, to hate all the people your relatives hate. You've got to be carefully taught. You've got to be carefully taught.
The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco has presented White Knight, Black Dish, or The Ultimate Last Fag Joke, starring, in order of appearance, Bob Dylan, Judge Ollie Marie Victoire, Harvey Milk, Dianne Feinstein, the fag nun Assunta Famia of the Sisters of Mercy and Vengeance, Dan White, an ex-cop, ex-fireman, and ex-supervisor, the Beatles, an ex-musical group, Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention, The Doors, Richard Nixon, an ex-president, Queen, Harry Britt, Larry Bensky, Gregory Lunsford, Susie Daniels, and William Tabbert. Thanks to Nikos Diamond for the North Beach Photo Fair skit. White Knight, Black Dish was produced by Fred Green and written and narrated by Randy Alfred. Next on KSAN's The Gay Life for June, Gwen Craig, vice president of the Harvey Milk Gay Democratic Club, provides a commentary on the events leading up to the explosive reaction to the verdict in the Dan White trial. We'll follow that with a discussion of where the gay movement goes from here. But first, Gwen Craig.
I'd like to talk about when people are pushed to the wall. In order to understand the White Knight, I think you have to understand that the Dan White verdict did not occur in a vacuum, that there were and are other factors which contributed to a legitimate rage that was demonstrated dramatically at our symbol of who's responsible, City Hall. Let's go back only so far as Harvey Milk and George Moscone. I don't think I have to reiterate what their presence meant to us and what their loss meant to us. And right here, when I say us, I don't mean only gay people, I mean all people who are getting less than they deserve. To all oppressed people in particular, to all San Franciscans as a whole, the assassinations of our friends Harvey and George were a crime against us all. And then, at the same time that we were struggling to deal with our grief and to analyze what changes would occur as a result of these murders, the results were coming in brutal detail. Attacks all too similar to the one that eventually killed our brother Robert Hillsborough began and kept coming. And when we turned to our protectors, the police, they seemed at best at what could be described as inattentive. And we began to hear of harassment by the police themselves as well. There was obviously an increased police presence on the streets of our neighborhoods, and people began to report that they were being unjustly hassled and sometimes abused and never treated with respect. And the police began appearing in our bars. Officers that I personally questioned as to why they were holding up space at the door of Amelia's told me they were just hanging out, at the same time that punks were just hanging out and looking out for some queers to beat up or stare. And then our district attorney turned his powers to harass on us and closed some of our bars and businesses under a seldom-used weapon called red light abatement. And there weren't many who didn't know of the famous Peg's Place incident, where marauding off-duty policemen pushed their way into a lesbian bar, causing damages and injuries. The women at the door thought that the solution was to call on who's responsible, the cops. And they were told, "We are the cops." The message came through loud and clear. And it took our mayor 2 weeks to say that something had happened that was wrong. And still the cops patrolled our streets and hung out at our bars. And all the time, the Dan White trial is going on, shouting out from newspaper stands and bleeping across our TV screens. And the jury is picked with startling speed, and no one is taken on who is black, Latino, Asian, and, God forbid, homosexual. One woman is turned away because she marched in the Gay Freedom Day parade, even though she declares her heterosexuality. And we are beginning to say to each other, something is wrong, something is wrong. About this time came the Feinstein meeting, where our mayor met with lesbians and gay men representing a significant cross-section of our community, most of them elected officers in the largest and best-known organizations. And we told her that these things were happening in a litany of details, specific accounts of the harassments and brutality. We told her that the lesbians and gay men that we had come to speak for were feeling threatened, frightened, pushed to the wall. We told her that George Moscone's pledge of the appointment of a gay person to the police commission was never more needed, and we were denied. We still asked, and we told her that the least she could do was to speak out, to show her support for our community, to show her outrage at what was happening in our community, and to be there for us. And nothing happened. But the trial was still happening, and the tears at the Hall of Justice were all for Dan White. If all these things weren't fair warning, then the dress rehearsal on Castro Street, on a warm Saturday, 10 days before the verdict, should have been enough of a premonition. Most of you have read about the mini-riot. Maybe some of you were there, numbers estimated in the hundreds. Our whistles brought those hundreds to the scene of what appeared to be yet another case of police harassment against one of our own. The paddy wagon came, and the police came in numbers with their nightsticks. The police pushed, the people pushed back. Chants went up. Go home! Go home! Dan White was a cop! Dan White was a cop! The police were turned away, that time. How must they have felt to have been turned away by a bunch of dykes and faggots? The account of the mini-riot appeared in the back pages of the Sunday paper. On page one was a touching account of Dan White's fascination with Ireland's terrible beauty. And the feature ended by saying that there were three victims, George Moscone, Harvey Milk, and Dan White. And while the victim sat in the courtroom shielded by bulletproof glass, we heard of policemen and firemen sporting Free Dan White T-shirts, and the same message began appearing in spray paint on walls around the city. Were the ones who are responsible seeing these things, hearing these things? Were they listening to us? Were they reading the papers? Do they understand about people being pushed to the wall? Do they know about Stonewall? Do they know what happened when a bunch of Puerto Rican drag queens and some other queers said enough? When they came to close the Stonewall, it was only another gay bar to be harassed. But to the people inside, they were being pushed to the wall. The rest is our history. Do they know our history? Do they understand the lessons of history? Do they know that this is only one year among hundreds of years that we have been treated as non-persons? We have a history of being pushed to the wall. I guess they have their picture of history. I know they have their picture of the present and of the future, and to them, we don't belong in it. There is no place in their picture for queers, and I know there is no place for black people, and no place for Asians, Hispanics, Native Americans, strong women, gentle men, people who believe in human rights before property rights, and people who have had the poor taste to show us their missing limbs and remind us that war is hell. Sometimes people like Martin Luther King and Robert Kennedy and Susan B. Anthony and Sojourner Truth and Malcolm X and Mother Jones and Ron Kovic and Harvey Milk come along to give us a glimmer of hope and give them a glimmer of truth and fight to put us in that picture where we belong. And sometimes that hope and that truth get snuffed out. So where do we go and where do we start? Well, first we start by fighting back. And when we fight back, we got to be real sure to fight it all back. We got to fight back against gays who hate blacks as much as against blacks who hate gays. We got to fight back against women who abuse what little power they can get as much as against the powerful who abuse women. We got to fight back against the conditions that oppress people and make those of us who should stand and fight together instead fight each other. We got to teach the ones who make it to the top that they have a responsibility to us on the bottom. And more than anything, we got to love each other. And just like Harvey always told us, we have to come out so our families and our friends can love us for who we are. I hope that you understand why I won't offer any apologies for this latest segment in the history of lesbians and gay men. And I hope that they are listening now.
That was Gwen Craig, Vice President of the Harvey Milk Gay Democratic Club. I'm Randy Alford, and this is The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco. Gwen and I are being joined now by three more gay activists to discuss the immediate future of the gay movement. Where do we go from here? We have Tom Ammiano, a mainstay of the Gay Teachers and School Workers Coalition. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Sabrina Sojourner, co-chair of the Gay Freedom Day Committee. Good morning, Sabrina.
Hi, Randy.
And Frank Fitch, San Francisco Charter Commissioner and Political Action Chair of the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Randy.
One of the first questions I want to ask is of Sabrina in terms of where do we go from here. We have our largest gay demonstration of the year and in the world planned for June 24th, that is Gay Freedom Day. Have the plans for Gay Freedom Day changed any in the aftermath of the Dan White verdict, Sabrina?
They would definitely have had to have changed in terms of the emphasis. Our theme, it was suggested at one point that our theme be changed. Our theme this year is Our Time Has Come. But the feeling is that it is still very much an appropriate term, theme. It's just that it's taken on a different light and a different meaning for us. There were a lot of complaints around last year's parade that it was way too political, and so we were looking at this year's parade and celebration as being a party, as being a happening. And the politics have definitely entered back into it.
Right. In 77, we had Anita Bryant and the Robert Hillsborough murder. In 78, we had John Briggs, and now we have the aftermath of the Dan White verdict. So as Roxanne Adana says, if it's not one thing, it's another.
That does definitely does seem to be true this year.
So is there going to have to be any increased security or monitoring arrangements?
Well, so far we are in the process of talking about what are our fears in terms of what is the worst thing that could happen. Of course, the worst thing that could happen would be an out-and-out riot, total chaos.
By the police.
The police. Well, and also by outsiders who are out to off fags, off a few dikes. And we are trying to prepare our monitors and ourselves for that and trying to create situations that will alleviate that possibility and will, and if should it happen, protect as many people and as much property as we can.
What's the best thing that could happen on Gay Freedom Day?
That we would have a real good time, as that's what usually happens on Gay Freedom Day, despite the politics and despite the fact that there are a lot of people who complain about the amount of political speeches that come from the stage. Ultimately, we all do have a real good time, and it's a real celebration of who we are as gay women and men.
You mentioned a fear of violence happening. What are people's reactions to the violence of the White Night, of the Night of the Verdict? I think we probably have a little bit of variation on that with four different people here.
You mean from experience, our experiences with other people?
No. Well, how you feel about it yourself? Tom?
I feel delighted that we, and I use that a real broad collective we, you know, gay men and gay women, you know, fought back in the way that we did. And we fought back at a building that stood as a symbol, and the symbol of the personage of Dan White and the jurors and the man who defended him. We didn't go after those people. So I say that in thinking of the horrified, sanctimonious reaction of a lot of the media and some of our more established people in the city at our right to balance, not to avenge strictly for emotional things, but to balance the way things are. It could have been a lot worse. We knew what we were doing, and the reactions I get from students at school and parents at school is that, gee, we always thought that you were exceptional. We always thought that gay people were passive. We always thought that sissies didn't fight back. And it's given us a new and needed dimension. So.
Are there any negative repercussions happening in city politics from the violence? Frank, you're fairly well plugged into city politics.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it negative. There's been some changes. The election's coming up this November. Have a different perspective, I think, now. A lot more people are evincing an interest in running for district attorney than were a couple of weeks ago. The mayor's re-election chances are made more complicated. It's hard to say at this point whether, you know, what direction it's going. The chief of police is under tremendous attack by the Police Officers Association and the Chamber of Commerce. So there are the District 5 race has become complicated because some people felt that Harry should have been more temperate, and other people feel he should have been more radical. And so people have opinions about his role Monday night and what he should or shouldn't have done. So that complicates politics and will make the races more interesting and more watched. And when Sabrina said that the best thing that could happen on Gay Freedom Day Parade would be that people would have a good time, I would say, and get involved, especially registered to vote, and because they're going to watch the election results and they're going to make decisions about us as a movement based on what happens. So I'd like us to be as involved in it as we can so that what they're going to say about us has some truth rather than not being true at all.
Gwen, you have a comment.
Yeah, I'd say that one negative political thing that's coming out of this perhaps is the investigations that seem to be starting to gear up. The mayor's blue ribbon panel, for example, according to the report I read in the Progress, the intent is to determine the perpetrators of the riot on Monday night. It's very clear to me that the perpetrators of the riot on Monday night are probably the ones I noted in the paper, the ones who didn't respond before it was too late and people could respond in the only way that seemed appropriate at the time. It's also very clear that what happened on Castro Street after City Hall had started up and gone off on its own, is clearly the perpetrators were the police. Every eyewitness account that we've had has indicated that nothing was happening on Castro Street. Ironically, most of the people who were there were the ones who had been upset about the violence they saw coming down at City Hall and had left to come back to the sanctuary of Castro Street and just relax and reflect. And the police came in. They were marching people down Market Street, literally marching people down Market Street, forcing them into the Castro. Cars came into the Castro and started patrolling, circling the block, on and on until people were coming out on the street to find out what was happening. And then we know about the Elephant Walk incident. I hope we all know about the Elephant Walk incident. Last Sunday, I went to visit someone who's in the hospital right now, and I've heard various reports of people who are seriously injured. One man who was attacked at 2:30 at night when everything should have been over has lost his spleen. He was only coming out of the doggy diner. There was a 6-year-old child that was clubbed. There were people who were clubbed as they were coming out of the opera house at night. The man that I visited has a fractured skull. The man in the bed next to him has broken jaw and a ring of fractures around his head and might lose an eye. I think the police, who we haven't heard very much about as far as their role in Monday night, are clearly the perpetrators. Clearly we're outraged. Clearly they should be punished.
Tom?
I was going to say, just a simple, for us anyway, a simple extension from the police as role models, if you remember that word, during the Briggs campaign towards young people. And the incidents of straight punks beating on gay men and women, especially in the area of Mission High School, which is so proximate to the Castro, has greatly increased. And I just attended a meeting with the school board president and Alioto and other members of the gay community about what we're going to do, and the principal of Mission High, about what measures can be taken, long range and short range, to stop the violence before there's a killing, because gay people are now fighting back. And so then there's a responsibility of how we fight back. And we're going to see the day when a, in quotes, straight Mission High School student, allow me my fantasy, is beaten up and stabbed or given a concussion. And given the state of our court system, I wouldn't want to be those gay people, and I don't want to see those straight punks killed, and I don't want to see Mission High School closed, as is being proposed by some angry groups of residents in that area. And the school district's posture at the meeting was one of fear. They feel that there are enough gay votes to do something like close Mission High School. And I think the reverse, the racism that happens if it's white males that are getting beat up on, and then their epithets and feelings towards the third world students who are beating them up. We have an extremely volatile, interurban example of where violence comes from and why it's sustained by the system instead of being prevented. So the beatings, I would say, are another negative aspect, the increasing attacks.
With the grand jury investigation that's apparently going on, the mayor's blue ribbon panel planning to go, this possibility still of a supervisors committee, we seem to have investigations sprouting up like wildflowers in the California spring. But there's kind of a dilemma for some people who want to see the police investigated but don't want to cooperate necessarily with an investigation that's seeking to find so-called perpetrators or instigators in the gay community. Does anyone have any feelings on the level or type of cooperation that gay individuals and that gay organizations should or should not offer these various investigations?
We had a real debate about that at the last meeting of the Harvey Milk Gay Democratic Club, and I think both sides were presented well, which was good. It gives people an opportunity to develop their own thinking about that. We didn't really reach any conclusion as an organization. There were those who felt that to participate is to be co-opted, that nothing good can come of all of this, and gay people would only be used in the end to say that there had been impartiality where there actually wouldn't be, that it's a rigged thing and that they know what they want out of it and it's rigged so that they will get exactly the results they want whether we participate or not. That was sort of one view. The other view was that we'd do better to be on the inside fighting than on the outside shouting about it. That there may be something that we can do to see that it is fair and that the real perpetrators are brought up to be punished if we're working from the inside, if we become a part of it. I, too, haven't really decided how I feel about it. I think that's the dilemma of our times, to figure out do we work within or do we work without. And we can only give both sides to people and let them decide for themselves.
Frank.
Well, I was a witness to the elephant walk incident, and I feel a need to talk about it. And so I intend to talk about it any chance I get, every opportunity I have. So if the grand jury is willing to hear, I'll tell them, and if the Internal Affairs Bureau is willing to listen, I'll tell them. And I mean, I was outraged, and I thought it was wrong, and I want to communicate that.
Posing a difficult question now for you. If you're on the stand and under oath to tell them about that, and you're asked while you're under oath, do you know the names or would you recognize the names of any people who you saw throw rocks at City Hall or commit any other acts of violence? How would you?
I wasn't at City Hall. I know no names.
I'd like to point out the history of the grand jury in this country as being used in a very abusive manner to those who don't have power. And especially pertaining to this, they really harassed these two lesbians from Connecticut about 3 or 4 years ago, due to their supposed involvement with Patricia Saxon. And these were two very middle-class lesbians who one time were at a party, and the FBI had no idea about gay lifestyles or anything. And eventually these two women had their lives harshly interrupted, and many, many personal bad personal things happened to them. The other thing is that sometimes we're asked to decide academic things like should we work from the inside or from the outside. I think we're doing well using both avenues, and we'll continue to do so. Whether or not we can get an indictment from the grand jury that the cops were the perpetrators, I don't feel that optimistic, given the history and the context.
Frank?
One thing to remember about the grand jury, it is the creature of the district attorney.
Right.
It hears only what he presents, and it makes the decisions basically the district attorney wants to get, because he supplies all the information. So whatever this grand jury does, we should be able to ascribe that to District Attorney Joseph Freitas.
Yeah, he's vulnerable.
Related to the whole issue of the district attorney grand jury, it seems that confidence of gay men and lesbians in the judicial system and the courts might have suffered a severe blow with the Dan White verdict, and yet we have 10 days later the Supreme Court of the state of California declaring that Pacific Telephone Company or any utility can't discriminate against us. And I kind of have the sense that the timing, if not the actual decision itself, might have been influenced by that civil disturbance
yes,
in the streets.
Well, I have a very direct comment about that. And that is that some of the strongest and most aggressive civil rights legislation that came down in this country occurred only after Birmingham and Detroit. And it was occurring and in process at the time of Watts. And it took people going to the streets and being angry and saying, I am not going to take this shit anymore, in order to get somebody to sit up and listen to them. And there's a real... I have a whole lot of feelings around the riot Monday night, and that are twofold, in fact. What happened, what I saw was gay people, the majority of which are white, and especially gay men, gay white men, waking up to the fact that if you're an oppressed person in this country, you're not going to get a whole lot of justice. And I don't think that a lot of them had seen that before, but not had recognized them as being victims of that injustice before. Because we all know that if Dan White, and I think it's real appropriate that his last name is White, had been anything other than a middle-class, male, heterosexual, able-bodied man, he would have gotten first or second-degree murder.
He was also a police officer.
Firefighter
as well.
Yes. Yeah, he was pictured as the all-American boy, and therefore, in the eyes of any all-white jury, which that jury was, he could do no wrong. Mm-hmm.
And remember that one of his campaign slogans that was on a poster is "White is right."
Oh my God!
And the jurors, in typical, I don't know what you want to call it, middle class schizophrenia, said, "Yes, indeed, he did kill them, but he didn't murder them." That's what they said. How zen!
The final chapter in the judicial procedures for Dan White is yet to be written. That's the sentencing, which is just 5 days before Gay Freedom Day, and Sabrina rolls her eyes back and looks up. It's very similar to the situation in 1977 when the Hillsborough murder occurred 4 days before Gay Freedom Day. This time, in a way, though, we know that something is going to happen, and we don't know what.
Yes, that's true. I want to say now that one of the precautions that we have taken around the parade that everyone should know about because it will conflict with the program is that child care will not be in the immediate area. It'll be at the new building of the MCC Church, and I don't have the address, but it will be. There will be posters telling people how to get there.
Okay, at the end of the show, I'm going to give the Gay Freedom Day Committee's address and phone number so that people can get in contact.
Yeah,
and
but that
that's
is
where they can get it.
And the feeling was, after going through a lot of different things, especially around something like child care, is that we, who are parents, did not want our kids in the area. We wanted them to be able to march in the parade with us because we felt that the likelihood of there being violence around the parade route is very nil because people will be moving. The violence that will, if any incidents occur, it'll be amongst the crowd, not amongst the marchers. And
your children can act as a deterrent many times.
Right.
Unless it's very explosive, then, of course.
Well,
didn't
the Harvey Milk birthday party, which was held the night after the riot, indicate that when the gay community, as opposed to large numbers of gay individuals without leadership, that when the gay community sets up an event and determines that it will be peaceful and gets the word out and trains the monitors and so forth, that it can be done, and it can be done with a style and a flair that perhaps we have a lot to teach other people about violence and nonviolence.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Sabrina, Frank, both want to say something. So.
Okay, I'll go first. I think there's a definite difference, though, between what the celebration of Harvey's birthday party that happened in the Castro area and the parade celebration, which is going to be on UN Plaza right across the street from City Hall.
Right, yeah.
And where Monday night occurred.
History places us.
The basic difference between Tuesday night and why Tuesday night did not erupt into violence and why Watts did is that where it is the neighborhood. The fact is that there are a lot of businesses that are owned and operated by gay people. They own the property as well as the profits from those businesses. And people, whether they live in that neighborhood or not, consider it their neighborhood because they can go there and they can give their money to other gay people. So in essence, they were protecting their own neighborhood that they had a real economic stake in by not causing any violence, by not doing any damage there. And whatever damage that would have been done there would most likely have been done by outsiders. As in the case of Watts, the people who were there had absolutely nothing to lose because they had no economic stake in that area. Going back to the 24th, I hope with everything that I could possibly hope with that there will be no trouble. That is what I really honestly want to happen. But the reality is that we are again in the UN Plaza in front of City Hall, and there exists the potential, because no one has anything to lose, to cause havoc. And what we want to try and do is to isolate those people, to do what we can to get people involved as monitors, and both medical monitors and security monitors, to be able to handle the 300,000 plus people we expect to have there.
So the committee is hoping for the best and planning for the worst.
Exactly.
We're in the midst of a discussion of what happens to the gay movement from here, and specifically in the near future with Gay Freedom Day on The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco. Frank Fitch, you want to add something to what Sabrina just had to say?
No, she covered a lot of it. I think on Tuesday night, after the Monday night at City Hall and then in the Castro, that it was the monitors that Sabrina alluded to that we organized that played a large role in isolating. There were a few people from outside, not part of our community, who wanted to create violence that night that were on Castro Tuesday night. But the monitors were able to deal with them. And a couple of times we had to escort them to the edge of the crowd and tell them to please not come back. But every demonstration that we've had as an organized gay community in San Francisco and every parade that we've had up to now have not only had no violent acts, but to the best of my knowledge, there's not been a single arrest. You know, we've been able to take care of ourselves. And that's not to say that we, you know, don't have to be concerned about June 24th, the timing, the sentencing, the passions that have been aroused. And we need monitors and we need people to come and help. And that's the only way that we can possibly hope not to have violence is people will help us and work with us.
Okay, we have only a few more minutes left. Does anyone have some thoughts on the national implications of events in San Francisco this spring? And it'll be this summer that Gay Freedom Day will be the first Sunday of summer. Frank.
Well, I feel that the sentence that Dan White got made me, as a gay elected official, feel like my life is not worth a lot. Never in the history of this country has a mayor or an official higher than mayor, like president or governor, been assassinated without the penalty either being life imprisonment or death. This is the only exception in the history of the United States of America. It doesn't augur well.
Sabrina?
I think that in terms of gay politics, that we have made a, like Stonewall back in 1969, that we're at another turning point. And we are also at a place in our own history and our own politics that we can start to build some bridges. We have people within our own community who are not just oppressed because of they are gay, but because they are Black, Asian, Hispanic, Native American, because they are disabled. And we need to start reaching within our own community and embellishing those people and connecting ourselves and working on our own racism, and therefore reach out into the cultures that they connect with and see where we can find common points. Respect one another's differences, but find those bridges that we can build.
Gwen.
I think most people read in the papers about how in, I believe it was New York, they marched in solidarity with us in a response to the white verdict. Also, Bob Ross, who's publisher of the BAR, had told me that he had been contacted by various courts around the country, Denver, Alaska, Vancouver, Canada, Boston, all areas, mostly on the West Coast, but across the country as well, who had called to offer their support and any financial aid that we might need for whatever reasons.
You're speaking about the gay royal courts.
Yes, right. And it's that type of response. Also, there was a group in Boston that contacted Harry Britt's office to say that they had immediately, spontaneously raised $1,500 that they would send out as soon as we wanted it there. So we're seeing, as a result of all this, a lot of solidarity. We've made contact with people now across the country.
Tom?
Yeah, that's the secret, the coalition. Now if we truly have the strength to inspire, as I think we have all throughout the nation from all the media that I have seen, they refer to it as gay rage, and I think, oh, God, I don't believe I'm seeing that in print. I'm so happy. It's up to us to follow through, and one of the ways to follow through to see that the implications stay sustained for all the different states is the coalescing that we all just hit upon. We can't, obviously, we can't do it alone. We now have a modicum of respect from communities that perhaps have been aloof. Let's not throw it away.
Okay, thank you, Tom Amiano, a mainstay of the Gay Teachers and School Workers Coalition. Thanks, Gwen Craig, Vice President of the Harvey Milk Gay Democratic Club. Thank you, Sabrina Sojourner, the co-chair of the Gay Freedom Day Committee. And thank you, Frank Fitch, Charter Commissioner for the City and County of San Francisco and the city's only elected gay official at the moment and the first gay official elected to citywide office in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. This is The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco. Gay Freedom Day is on Sunday, June 24th, and the Gay Freedom Day Committee needs volunteer monitors for both security and medical reasons. And if you need information about floats or other entries or booths in the fair following the Gay Freedom Day Parade, you can contact the Gay Freedom Day Committee at 1 United Nations Plaza, San Francisco, 94102. The phone number is 641-0100. That's Gay Freedom Day Committee, 1 UN Plaza, San Francisco, 94102. Phone is 641-0100, and Gay Freedom Day is Sunday, June 24th. The San Francisco Gay History Project is presenting Lesbian Masquerade, an informal history of lesbians in early San Francisco who passed their entire lives as men. This is a talk with slides and music by Alan Berube. It's taking place at the Women's Building at 3543 18th Street in San Francisco at 8 o'clock on Thursday, June 21st. The admission is a $2 donation, and it's a benefit for the San Francisco Gay History Project. The building is wheelchair accessible, and child care will be provided. For more information, call 285-7137 or 626-3893. That's 285-7137 or 626-3893. The Gay Life is produced for the Public Affairs Department of KSAN by Fred Green. I'm your host, Randy Alfred. If you're listening on Sunday morning, the show will be repeated tomorrow night at 1 o'clock. That's early Tuesday morning. The next edition of The Gay Life will air on July 1st and 3rd, featuring the first episode of Gays of Our Lives, a radio soap opera. Tune in on KSAN San Francisco.